Hello, I'm Pastor Rod Holler of the Cape Baptist Church in Cape Coral, Florida. I hope this message will be a blessing to you. Thanks for listening.
Friends and foes. 2 Samuel chapter 15. The rebellion has begun. Absalom has sprung his plan. The trumpet has sounded. The spies acted throughout the land. And suddenly David found himself in a position he has to flee from Jerusalem. His servants are with him. His household's with him. But he sends 10 concubines back to keep the house. The Cherethites and the Pelethites continue with him. The Cherethites being the bodyguards, the Pelethites, his messengers. Ittai and 600 other Philistines go with him. David bids them to return, but Ittai pledges his faithfulness to David. And with these, David crosses the brook Kidron. Very sad time in the nation of Israel. But isn't this so much like life? The turmoil, the unrest. You watch the news. It's getting worse. And it's the world. It's not isolated anymore. It's everywhere. Random shootings, violence, incompetence. Well, we're going to continue on with this study in this sad state of affairs in the nation of Israel, God's people. As David is having to leave Jerusalem, Absalom taking over the throne, 2 Samuel chapter 15, verse 24, let us start and read our text passage for tonight. And lo, Zadok also and all the Levites were with him, bearing the Ark of the Covenant of God. And they set down the Ark of God, and Abiathar went up until all the people had done passing out of the city. And the king said unto Zadok, carry back the Ark of God into the city. If I shall find favor in the eyes of the Lord, he will bring me again and show me both it and his habitation. But if he thus say, I have no delight in thee, behold, here am I. Let him do to me as seemeth good unto him. The king said also unto Zadok the priest, art thou not a seer? Return into the city in peace, and your two sons with you, Ahimaaz, thy son, and Jonathan, the son of Abiathar. See, I will tarry in the plain of the wilderness until there come word from you to certify me. Zadok, therefore, and Abiathar carried the Ark of God again to Jerusalem, and they tarried there. And David went up by the ascent of Mount Olivet and wept as he went up, and had his head covered, and he went barefoot. And all the people that was with him covered every man his head, and they went up weeping as they went up. And one told David, saying, Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. And David said, O Lord, I pray thee, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. We get the feel for this terrible, terrible time right now as these people are weeping, leaving the city. Absalom rebelling against his father. And David writes a psalm at this time. When you read the Psalms many times, you're going to pick up the very obvious attitude of grief and pain. And David surely wrote from that vantage point many times. Well, Psalm chapter 3 is one of those times as he writes at this very time, and you can imagine him there weeping. And there he writes Psalm chapter 3. Let us consider this psalm. A psalm of David when he fled from Absalom his son. Lord, how are they increased that trouble me? Many are they that rise up against me. Lord, how are they increased that trouble me? Many are they that rise up against me. Many there be which say of my soul, there is no help for him in God, Selah. But thou, O Lord, art a shield for me, my glory, and the lifter up of mine head. I cried unto the Lord with my voice, and he heard me out of his holy hill. Selah. I laid me down and slept. I awake, for the Lord sustained me. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people that have set themselves against me round about. Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God, for thou hast smitten all mine enemies upon thy cheekbone. Thou hast broken the teeth of the ungodly. Salvation belongeth unto the Lord. Thy blessing is upon thy people. Selah. Quote, the poor, broken-hearted father complains of the multitude of his enemies. And in 2 Samuel 15:12, you find it written, the conspiracy was strong, for the people increased continually with Absalom, while the troops of David constantly diminished. Lord, how they are increased that trouble me. Here is a note of exclamation to express the wonder of woe which amazed and perplexed the fugitive father. Alas, I see no limit to my misery, for my troubles are enlarged. There was enough at first to sink me very low, but lo, my enemies multiply. When Absalom, my darling, is in rebellion against me, it's enough to break my heart. But lo, Ahithophel hath forsaken me. My faithful counselors have turned their backs on me. Lo, my generals and soldiers have deserted my standard. How are they increased that trouble me? Trouble comes in like flocks. Sorrow has a numerous family, end quote. Let's consider briefly this psalm tonight that David has written as he flees from his own son. Many there be which say of my soul, verse 2, there is no help for him in God, Selah. You find the word Selah throughout the Psalms. We don't know exactly what it means per se, but we do know this. It always indicates a time to pause and reflect at what was just said or sung, probably in the Psalms. Many there be which say of my soul, there is no help for him in God, Selah. These people are rising up against David. It's bad enough. And then they start saying, you know, David, even God's against you. And yet we're going to see that David surely does find his hope in the Lord. Verse 3, but thou, O Lord, capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D, means the original root word there is Jehovah. But thou, O Jehovah, art a shield for me, my glory, and the lifter up of mine head. David surely has sinned. But folks, who hasn't? And God wants us to confess before him and we find mercy. Did David sin greatly? He sinned greatly. But in the midst of all this, what does he say? Thou art a shield for me. My glory. Not me, not me. God is my glory and the lifter up of mine head. And God has not forsaken him. God hears the cry of David, verse 4. I cried unto the Lord with my voice, and he heard me out of his holy hill. Selah, stop and think about it. God heard me. A man who committed adultery and murder, and God heard me. Folks, that's the God we have. Well, I'm too bad. Really? God heard me out of his holy hill. His holy hill. A sinner like me, David could say. And God heard me in his holiness. Praise God for mercy. God gave him such comfort that he slept soundly in peace and awakened. Kind of sounds like I've got a table in the presence of mine enemies. He's also got a bed. Verse 5, I laid me down and slept. I awake, for the Lord sustained me. It does not say I awoke in terror. He awakened naturally. His sleep was complete and it was time to wake up because God's hand was on this man. In the midst of all of his failure, God says, I have forgiven. Let's move forward. And David has great confidence in the Lord. Verse 6, I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people that have set themselves against me round about. Let me quote again. The psalmist will trust despite appearances. He will not be afraid though 10,000s of people have set themselves against him round about. Let us here limit our thoughts to this one idea, despite appearances. What could look worse to human sight than this array of 10,000s of people? Ruin seemed to stare him in the face. Wherever he looked, an enemy was to be seen. What was one against 10,000? It often happens that God's people come into circumstances like this. They say, all these things are against me. They seem scarce able to count their troubles. They cannot see a loophole through which to escape. Things look very black indeed. It is great faith and trust which says under these circumstances, I will not be afraid. And surely the devil is going to plant those thoughts to remind them, but what a wretch you are. And David can say, and I confessed it too. And my God is merciful. And I can face 10,000s of people. Verse 7, Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God, for thou hast smitten all mine enemies upon the cheekbone, thou hast broken the teeth of the ungodly. Here we have the comparison, the enemy, to some type of a wild animal that bites viciously with the teeth. And David has said, thou hast, past tense, smitten all my enemies upon the cheekbone. I think he's reminding himself and the Lord of what God has done in times past. Whether figuratively or whether literally, David is saying he broke the teeth of the ungodly. That would be to break out the teeth that a wild animal could be vicious and bite with. God has broken out their teeth that they can bite me no more and hurt. Oh, they might, can I use the expression, gum me? Or were their teeth broken and they didn't even want to hurt me with trying to do that? Whatever it is, those teeth that once came to be vicious and tear the flesh off my bones, God has broken those teeth. David remembers this and he now says, Arise, Lord, save me. And God is there to hear his cry. Verse 8, Salvation belongeth unto the Lord, thy blessing is upon thy people. Selah, stop and think about it. And I think we can all take this to our own life and say, there are times, dear God, right now I have problems. And God says, I am there. Call on me. Salvation belongeth unto the Lord. Salvation here is referring to deliverance from enemies, not for salvation of your eternal soul through faith in Jesus Christ. As some commentators would say. To me, that would just be totally out of context. He's talking about, Lord, save me from 10,000s of enemies. And he is admitting, it's beyond me, but my God is my shield. My God is the one that will break out their teeth. Salvation belongs unto the Lord. Save me from this situation. And God surely heard his cry. And the rest of the story we see in 2 Samuel, David lived through it. God was there. Verse 24. David has written this psalm somewhere along there. You can get a real feel for how he feels. Verse 24, And lo, Zadok also and all the Levites were with him, bearing the ark of the covenant of God, and they set down the ark of God, and Abiathar went up until all the people had done passing out of the city. Now we know from previous studies that it is the responsibility of the priests to tend to the things of the law, that means feasts, that means the tabernacle, that means sacrifices, that means tending toward the priestly duties and all they're in, and one of those major responsibilities is taking care of the ark. Now, if you remember back in chapter 6 of 2 Samuel, David hastily made plans without consulting and getting educated and doing things right. He moved the ark incorrectly. Uzzah reached up and touched it and died. It is the responsibility of the priests to move that ark. And so it is here we have Zadok and the priests are properly moving the ark. Verse 25, and the king said unto Zadok, carry back the ark. They just transported it at late notice. Grab this ark, guys. Let's go. And they flee from the city. And David says, take it back. And if I find in the eyes of the Lord favor, he'll bring me back and show me both it and his habitation. Go put it back. Why? I personally believe that it goes back to 1 Samuel chapter 4 when Eli was still the high priest and his two sons were his priests serving there at the tabernacle, and they were two vile men, and Eli did nothing to restrain them. And there was a battle between Israel and the Philistines, and out in the battlefield they said, hey, let's get the ark and bring it out to the battlefield. It was nothing more than a rabbit's foot to them. They weren't pursuing the God of the ark. They thought the ark itself was the lucky charm. 1 Samuel chapter 4, verse 3, and when the people were come into the camp, the elders of Israel said, wherefore hath the Lord smitten us this day before the Philistines? Let us fetch the ark of the covenant of the Lord out of Shiloh unto us, that when it cometh among us, it may save us out of the hand of the enemies. Now, what did David just say as he read that psalm there in Psalms chapter 3? God is the one. And I truly think David is saying, wait a minute. This ark is not a rabbit's foot. Put it back. And if God's favor is with us, I'll see it again. But I think he did not want Israel to put confidence in that ark, but rather the God of the ark. When Israel brought that ark out to the battlefield in 1 Samuel chapter 4, they were no better than the pagan Philistines. They put their confidence in a thing, not in God. And God allowed that ark to be captured. And I think David knew that story and said, you know what, we're not going to have this happen. At that time, Israel was fighting an enemy. At this time, David has an enemy. And David says, we're not going to repeat that mistake. 1 Samuel chapter 4, verse 10, and the Philistines fought, and Israel was smitten. And they fled every man into his tent, and there was a very great slaughter. For there fell of Israel 30,000 footmen, and the ark of God was taken. So it is. David sent it back, along with Zadok and the priests. Verse 26. But if he say thus, I have no delight in thee, behold, here I am. If God says I go back and have favor, I'll see it again. And if God does not have favor on me, then I won't see it. Rather, behold, here I am. Let God do to me as he seems good unto me. As seems good unto him. David is really a broken man. If God sends me back, praise his name. If he doesn't, Lord, whatever you do is right and proper, and I accept it. Totally. Quote, these words show how much God was in David's mind in connection with the events of that humiliating day. They show, too, that he did not regard his case as desperate, but everything turned on the will of God. It might be that in his great mercy he would bring him back to Jerusalem. His former promises led him to think of this as possible. Perhaps probable, termination of the insurrection, but it might also be that the Lord had no more delight in him, the chastening of which he was now visiting him, for his sin might involve the success of Absalom. Verse 27. David gets a, hey, wait a minute. The king said to the priest, Zadok, aren't you a seer? Hey, wait a minute. That could be pretty handy right now. Return to the city in peace, and your two sons with you, Ahimaaz, thy son, and Jonathan, the son of Abiathar. I want you to go back. You're a seer, right? A seer is the old term expression for prophet. And a prophet receives insights from God and passes it on to the people. Now remember, a priest basically takes the ministry of from the people to God. Jesus Christ, of course, our intercessor. But a prophet gets revelation from God to the people. Hey, aren't you a seer too? Don't you get revelation from God? You know, right now that could be pretty handy. So he sends him back. I will tarry in the plain of the wilderness until there come word from you to certify me or to let me know it's okay for me to come back. This is incredible trust that David has in Zadok. He knows he is going to be there and yet in the midst of danger. I need you to say what I'm telling you to do. Go back to Jerusalem. I want you to protect the ark. I want you to be very observant and see what God lays on your heart and open your eyes to what's happening in the city. And if it's okay for me to come back, please send a messenger. And he trusts Zadok to this incredible responsibility. So Zadok, Abiathar, and the priests return. Verse 29, Zadok therefore and Abiathar carried the ark of God again to Jerusalem, and they tarried there. And David continues on, verse 30, and David went up by the ascent of Mount Olivet and wept as he went up, and he had his head covered, and he went barefoot, and all the people that were with him covered every man his head. They went up weeping as they went up. David was barefoot. I don't know exactly what that means. I wonder either it is an expression of incredible humility or he fled in such haste he couldn't get his shoes. I don't know. I'll be honest, I don't know exactly why that's there. But we do know that he's going up and everybody covered their head. This incredible humility, weeping as they go. Appearances look great, don't they? Absalom is now the rising star. People are throughout the nation supporting him. And David is the disgraced king right now, scrambling to get out and take some people with him. And it all looks, if you just went by earthly looks, boy, Absalom's got it, doesn't he? But who's God's man? David. David. David has 10,000s of enemies around him right now. And God says, that's where my hand is. Not on Absalom. My hand is against Absalom. Do not be deceived. Do not be deceived. Earthly accomplishments, possessions, positions don't always mean what they may indicate. In this case, David seems the one that is not succeeding, but rather he surely is God's man. And one told David, saying, Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. That is the last thing David wanted to hear. He's already leaving the city. He's got his head covered. He is weeping. And somebody comes up and says, Ahithophel is among the conspirators. Did you have to tell me that now? And David said, O Lord, I pray thee, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. Remember this. His counsel was like an oracle of God. This man had wisdom upon wisdom. This man was David's counselor, we saw in our study. Many people think that Psalm 55 was written at this time about Ahithophel. Consider David's grief, Psalm 55:12, for it was not an enemy that reproached me. Then I could have borne it. Neither was it he that hated me that did magnify himself against me. Then I would have hid myself from him. It was thou, a man mine equal, my guide, my acquaintance. We took sweet counsel together and walked into the house of God in company. And when he heard that Ahithophel turned on him, it cut him deep. Oh God, it's bad enough. Not that. Not that. David calls for deliverance from Ahithophel. Lord, I pray thee, turn the counsel of Ahithophel. His counsel was good. That man was wise. Turn it into foolishness. Consider this prayer. Number one, it was short. Number two, it was sincere. Number three, it was specific. Number four, it showed David's reliance upon God. And it shows us that God is ready to hear, even in a moment's notice, the cry of his children. Dear God, dear God, turn this man's counsel to foolishness. Your prayers don't have to be long. They can be very simple. Be very honest and pray to God. And this is what David did. I want to kind of put here as a little bit of a footnote, or shall we say maybe an appendix to this passage. We read earlier in this exodus from Jerusalem across the Kidron Valley and, of course, up the Mount Olivet, where the priests were there. Note that there are two priests, Zadok and Abiathar, but I want you to notice how the emphasis is upon Zadok, not upon Abiathar. 1 Samuel 15:24. And lo, Zadok also and all the Levites were with him, bearing the ark of the covenant of God. And they set down the ark of God, and Abiathar went up until all the people had done passing out of the city. And the king said unto Zadok, not Abiathar, carry back the ark of God into the city, if I shall find favor in the eyes of the Lord. Verse 26, but if he say thus, I have no delight in thee, behold, here I am. Let him do to me as seemeth good unto him. 27, and the king said unto Zadok the priest, aren't you a seer? Well, then you go back to the city and your two sons with you, Ahimaaz thy son and Jonathan the son of Abiathar. 29, Zadok therefore and Abiathar carried the ark of God again to Jerusalem. And lo, Zadok also and all the priests were with him, bearing the ark of the covenant, and they set down the ark of God, and Abiathar went up. We see an emphasis on Zadok, not on Abiathar. I just want to touch upon this briefly. The confusion of the priesthood really goes back to the book of Judges. At the end of the book of Judges, you see a priest running around, will you hire me? Will you hire me? And he finally gets a job. Because Israel was in such a pathetic spiritual state that the priesthood was a disaster. And in 1 Samuel, we see Eli the high priest. But the high priest was to be the bloodline of Eleazar, the son of Aaron. But Eli wasn't of the bloodline of Eleazar, he was of the bloodline of Ithamar. The high priest is in the wrong bloodline. And there's going to be a confusion between these bloodlines of Eli, his descendants, and Abiathar, and then you're going to have Zadok out here kind of on the scene. And you notice the emphasis is on Zadok because he is of the sons of Eleazar. If you remember, long ago in our study in 1 Samuel chapter 3, Samuel's a little boy. And during the night, he's called by God, and he keeps running to Eli. And finally, Eli says, next time, say yes, Lord. And the Lord tells Eli of this incredible judgment coming upon Israel slash Eli and his family because of their sin. 1 Samuel 23:35, I, God, will raise up a faithful priest. Eli is of the wrong bloodline. That shall do according to all that is in mine heart and in my mind. I will build him a sure house. He shall walk before mine anointed forever. There is coming a faithful priest one day. David dies, Solomon ascends to the throne, and we're in 1 Kings chapter 2, verse 26. And unto Abiathar, who's of the wrong bloodline, said the king, get thee to Anathoth unto thine own fields, for thou art worthy of death. Get out. But I will not at this time put thee to death, because thou bearest the ark of the Lord before David my father, and because thou hast been afflicted in all wherein my father was afflicted. You did stay faithful to my dad in his hour of need. Verse 27, so Solomon thrust out Abiathar from being priest unto the Lord, that he might fulfill the word of the Lord which he spoke back in 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 35, concerning the house of Eli in Shiloh. And so it is, as we read this here in 2 Samuel chapter 15, we see the emphasis on Zadok. 1 Kings chapter 2, verse 35. And the king, Solomon, put Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, in his room over the host, and Zadok the priest did the king put in the room of Abiathar. And finally, the bloodline gets back in line, and the right person is the high priest. But it all goes back to the end of Judges, when things were in such a terrible state of spiritual decay, and it took many years to get it straightened out. Well, surely we're seeing here in this passage, David is the rejected king. He has his friends, and he has his foes. His greatest heartache, of course, from his son Absalom and from his beloved counselor Ahithophel. And the most important thing that David could do is stay right before God. But do we not see the Son of David, Jesus Christ, is also the rejected king? They cried out, away with him, crucify him. And Pilate said, shall I crucify your king? They said, we have no king but Caesar. And at this time, David is being rejected, and his son, Jesus Christ, one day will be rejected. But both will come triumphant back to reign. The incredible pictures we have. So it is. Israel is in a terrible condition of turmoil, but through it all, Absalom's trying to take the throne, David's fleeing for his life, but don't forget this. As we look at human government, remember, through it all, God is on the throne, and he is not fleeing. And he is King of Kings and Lord of Lords, and all the turmoil down here on this earth, we find our anchor in Him.
This is Pastor Rod Holler. I pray you enjoyed that message. Thanks for listening.